Fitness4Radio.com.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
This is 4 Radio, a media platform used to elevate voices and empower dreams. And now, Healing Through Prayer with Corrine Walson.
Good morning. Welcome to Healing Through Prayer. I'm your host, Corrine Walson, and it is really my pleasure to meet with you on these Friday mornings. Today's topic is it well with thee? You know, the year 2014 is upon us, and I can tell you right now that it's not going to be a year for the timid or those who would rather fade into the background than to become an object of another or the world's focus. We need those who aren't impressed by the opinions and fears of others, or who like to play it safe by staying small. This is the year that our works must confirm our faith. The time for hanging back, allowing others to take the lead or go first, is now past. We are out of time. Now is that time. Not for another generation, not for your neighbor or your boss or somebody famous to take up the cause. The greater works that Jesus was talking about, that isn't for some future generation. With all of the mass communication devices we have available to us today, the time really is now. Love must conquer fear and hatred in our day. There's enough desire, but we've got to organize. We have to step out in the faith we proclaim to have on Sunday mornings. We must force ourselves to walk the walk, to stretch ourselves, and to really move. That weird feeling that so many are talking about, that they're trying to figure out what their purpose is, a distant feeling that something's coming. There's a shift, a change, but we don't know quite what it is. So many people are describing having the same experience. And I don't think it's a prediction of doomsday, but what I'm saying is that the way things are going, we are really out of time to hand the issues down to the next generation. And that I know one thing for sure, and that is the only force greater than the greed and selfishness that seems to be undermining this great nation is love. That's not namby-pamby talk. This is the real deal. Only in the presence of love does hatred lose its seeming power. Only the light forces the elimination of all darkness. There is no other way. I feel that most people are already on board with these thoughts, these ideas. They sense what I sense, and they're willing, but they're not at all sure how to proceed. A change is needed, but what do we do? Well, Christian soldiers, line up, because we're going to get our marching orders today. Let's review a few basics for any newcomers to the show. We know that human consciousness equals human experience. So what we believe is what we see, as surely as what we see is what we believe. They are one and the same. This is the key to your human experience. We will have a positive or negative experience here proportionately to the fundamental beliefs we hold. Now let's go up a level. God created all that is. God is good, and God is love. Therefore, only what is good and what is divinely loving is real. So anything in your experience that is genuinely good and expresses God's love is real. Anything else, sin, sickness, scarcity, even death, are unreal. Jesus came and conquered every attempt of this world to prove that something other than what God created is real. He annihilated error and all its myriad claims. He saw right through all of them, including death, and proved their nothingness when each false claim was held up before the light of the Christ or truth of being. So there seems to be two levels of creation, but in reality there cannot be, for one is illusion, a dream, a lie of separation from our God and sole creator. The other is reality, the fact of our ever-present oneness with God, our inseparable life that is God, the experience of living, moving, and having our being in Him. This is where Jesus lived out from. He was awake to the truth. He never doubted who and what He was as the perfect Son of God, and He saw every other man and woman He encountered in the same light. And this vision of the perfect Son of God healed that person's false concept of him or herself and set them free from the prison of false belief. There is one creation, wholly perfect and complete. You scoff in disbelief because this surely isn't what you're experiencing right now, or perhaps you agree in theory, but you're frustrated because you can't seem to experience this perfection that you have been told is your birthright. It's kind of like being in a dark room, and you know full well that there's a door there somewhere, but for the life of you, you can't find it. Well, how do we get from point A to point B? How do we merge our lives from one of limitation based on false beliefs to enjoying our inheritance as God's children? Where's the bloody door? The doorknob is the understanding that God's creation is already perfect. His work is done. If there is any work that seems to be done, it is for us to bring our understanding in line with this present fact. We bridge the gap of what we understand to be the truth and our human experience by lining up our situation with the truth of God's creating, and then walking in the direction that we would look. Today, I'm going to use the example of supply to illustrate this. Everything occurs at the level of thought. God is mind, and we are mind's ideas, perfect and complete. In reality, in God's creation, there is no such thing as lack, scarcity, deprivation, or fear. Infinite mind is never limited. It is an unlimited, unbounded, and infinite wellspring of ideas, creating and multiplying exponentially. That's the nature of mind, to express itself without limitation. And because this is so, and because God knows our needs even before we ask, we can be sure that for every demand, there is a supply. For every supply, there is a demand. There is no surplus or discarded ideas, and there are no area where ideas are wanted but unavailable. Again, supply equals demand. So this is truth, and it is. Then as soon as you have a need, knowing that God already knows and supplies all of His children's needs, the matter has been fully answered and is on its way to you in a way that is perfect for you and your situation. Sounds great, right? That's what we want. So after we give the matter over to God, who is more than capable in His infinite wisdom to answer your need, why don't we always see the evidence of our petition? What happens between the time we ask and give it over to God and the feeling of letdown we experience if it doesn't arrive or manifest itself? We screw it all up by doubting and expressing fear. The yeah buts, what ifs, or how the hecks come up. We humanly look at the situation and reason for ourselves that there's no possible way for the answer to come. We analyze our life and infuse it with doubt and fear because we cannot see the answer. We stare at an empty bank account register, or we look to our limited paycheck, and we just disbelieve that supply can come to us in any other way, through some avenue we've not even considered. We actually have the audacity to limit divine intelligence, you know, the creator of the universe that keeps everything in perfect balance without our help? Yeah. Okay, so let's back up. Say you have a need. You ask God for the help, and you claim you have faith to let it go and leave the situation in His capable hands for an hour, maybe. Do you then voice your fears to your spouse, to your children, to your friends? Do you act in fear? Do you run around fulfilling the role of a frightened person? Or do you claim your God-given dominion over the situation and calmly wait on a God who never fails? Seriously, how do you act? Every sigh, every fearful tear, every fearful word you speak, every fearful, doubtful expression or written communication is registered, and your fear and your doubt act as a neutralizer, and the prayer is thwarted. You will never have your prayer answered while standing from fear. Fear is a block to love. Your beliefs are manifested by your acts and words. You claim to have faith, but where is it when you're tested? You say God is omnipotent, but how do you behave when life starts to test you? What is your first thought when you see you don't have enough funds in the bank and you have a bill that needs to get paid the same day? What is your knee-jerk reaction when you or your partner lose a job? I think if we're honest with ourselves, it's to admit that we feel fear, anxiety, that we believe that we ourselves have to solve the problem, and we feel the pressure that accompanies this feeling of, it's all up to me and I can't do it, or everybody's depending on me. What am I going to do? We must learn to change our default reactions under these conditions. So you've done the first step, pray, leave it with God, and we know that because in reality there is no lack or scarcity, that we're simply aligning our thought and belief with the truth, and that this truth is then going to manifest itself in a practical and perfect way for your situation. So then how do we rid ourselves of the fear and doubt while we're waiting for God's answer to manifest itself in our experience? It's to act in alignment with this truth even before you see the evidence. The serpent or mortal mind does not want you to have your prayers answered. In fact, it's very invested in making sure that it fills you up with the fear and doubt and self-condemnation. All those thoughts, you know, God doesn't have time for me. God doesn't know about me and my problems. I'm a sinner. Why would God help me? I pray, but nothing happens, therefore there's no God, or else if there is, I'm simply not worthy. Oof, all of that is ego or mortal mind chatter there to prevent you from experiencing the truth. These lies are so typical that it's almost funny. Mortal mind attacks us in the interim between our prayers and the demonstration of that prayer or evidence of it in our lives. And we give up when the answer doesn't come right away or in a way we think it should. We easily get discouraged and we give up, which effectively wipes out the prayer. The key is to take this time to act out in faith based upon the laws of God. Good. Remember in the Bible when Elisha instructed the king of Israel to have his men dig ditches in a valley when there was no wind or rain, no clouds, no sign of inclement or rainy weather to come. But then God sent water the next morning that filled the valley for the men and the cattle to drink. They needed to dig the ditch and prepare for God's blessing, even when there was no physical evidence of any means with which it would happen. They had to step out in faith, deny what the physical senses and human reasoning dictated, and obey Elisha's command, and they were rewarded. There's some good instruction in the book of James, the first chapter. We're instructed to count it all joy when ye fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. And a little further down it goes on to read, blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Every good gift, every perfect gift is from above, and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. But be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any be a hearer of the word, and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his natural face in a glass. For he beholdeth himself, and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. But whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty, and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of this work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. Well, there you go. To be a doer and not just a hearer. So we are being taught that those that simply hear the word and say they have faith, but then do not take action, will never receive the blessings they seek. It's given to those who see and do. Those that take the step in the direction of their faith, even when the physical picture doesn't support what we are asserting in the name of God. The answer is understanding that God loves us. He knows our needs and supplies them. Then in support of this, we act, talk, and walk in accordance with this truth. We dig a ditch. We speak words of faith and completion over the fact that God's work is already done. We set the table, so to speak, and allow the blessings to manifest themselves in their perfect way and in their perfect timing. Ask, and ye shall receive. Our duty is not to waver, not to be double-minded. One of the most powerful examples of this that I have found in all of the Bible is at 2 Kings, where we learn about a Shunammite woman who had shown great kindness to Elisha, a man of God. And when Elisha asked what he could do for her to repay her for her kindnesses, she told him how she had wanted a child, but her husband was of old age. Elisha told her that she would conceive and give birth to a son. And she did, in fact, conceive and gave birth to a son. And when the boy was grown, he'd gone out into the fields where his father was and was complaining about his head hurting him. The father directed the servant to take the boy to his mother, where he sat for a while and then died on her lap. The woman put the boy on the bed of the roadside chamber she and her husband had made for Elisha, and she hurried off to find the man of God. Elisha saw her coming afar off and sent his servant to meet the Shunammite woman. He said, run now, I pray thee, to meet her, and say unto her, is it well with thee? Is it well with thy husband? Is it well with the child? And she answered, it is well. We know that the woman was fearful, that she had watched her son, her only son, die in her lap. But she did not fall to pieces. She took action. She held her faith in God. She went to Elisha, and when asked by his servant if it was well with her and her family, she replied, it is well. And this doing in the spirit of faith, even while fearful and in the face of the worst physical evidence a mother could endure, she replied with her words that it is well. This was her ditch. This was her faith in action, providing the space and means for the manifestation of truth to come to her in her experience. This was a lining up of her beliefs with the truth of what is eternal life. This was grasping the door handle in the darkened room. She knew that with God all things are possible. She'd seen it. She prepared room for the man of God at her own home, perceiving and recalling that Elisha walked with God, and that the same works that Elisha did, these same works could be made manifest in her life also. This is the powerful declaration we must have over our lives, even in the face of whatever appears to make us doubt and be fearful. It is well. It is well because God is our creator and God is love. It is well because only what God creates is real and God is good. It is well because fear cannot exist in the presence of love, and love is all in all. It is well. It already is. And it is up to us to see this in our experience when we cast out fear and cling steadfastly to the truth as it is given to us in the Bible. We must perform in accordance with our faith. Faith without works is dead. It's not enough to simply believe, but to act in accordance with this belief. What are you saying? What are you talking about with others? What secret beliefs are you holding tightly to that take priority over the truths you utter in the name of God? Are you living timidly, or are you living boldly? Are you stepping out in the face of contradictory physical evidence, or are you waiting for the human picture to change before you step out in faith? Remember, human consciousness equals human experience. Your thoughts and beliefs precede your experience, waiting for life to change or the things to change around you before you change your belief or faith is futile. You must dig your ditch before the rain clouds come. You must declare health and life over you and yours before you see the healing works. You must act out in faith of abundant supply before the money manifests itself. It's not easy at first. Every thought in you will rebel and try to convince you not to do this. But always remember that when mortal mind or ego starts to object vehemently, you know you're making progress. It doesn't want you to walk out in faith or to see the evidence of your faith, because when you have more faith in God than what is in your physical senses or what they're declaring to you, then mortal mind ceases to have a function. Its sole reason for being is to convince you that you're separate from God and that you have a separate existence. When you finally discover that the kingdom of heaven is yours and is within you, that you cannot be separated from your loving Creator, then the ego is banished back to its native nothingness. It ceases to be a, quote, thing in your consciousness and therefore ceases to exist. When we learn to rest in God, knowing that He supplies all our needs, when we refuse to waver while we wait, when we take affirmative steps in furtherance of our petition for help, then God moves into that space we've created, and our prayers are answered. This is the best part. We are visited by angel messengers, thoughts that develop into supply, people showing up at just the right time, avenues that we'd never considered before open up plainly to us. I like what Mrs. Mary Baker Eddy wrote about angels in a collection called Miscellaneous Writings. She said, "When angels visit us, we do not hear the rustle of wings, nor feel the feathery touch of the breast of the dove, but we know their presence by the love they create in our hearts. Oh, may you feel this touch. It is not the clasping of hands, nor a loved person present. It is more than this. It is a spiritual idea that lights your path. The psalmist saith, he shall give his angels charge over thee. God gives you his spiritual ideas, and in turn, they give you daily supplies. Never ask for tomorrow. It is enough that divine love is an ever-present help. And if you wait, never doubting, you will have all you need every moment. What a glorious inheritance is given to us through the understanding of omnipresent love. More we cannot ask, more we do not want, more we cannot have. This sweet assurance is the peace, be still, to all human fears, to suffering of every sort. Yes, what a glorious inheritance it is, ours for the taking. It's ours, already, here, right now. Only blindness keeps us from cashing in. Fear, doubt, the mud on the window pane that blocks our view of all that God has for his children. Fear and doubt run from the light of truth, the Christ. Claim the truth that God is your Father, Mother. God loves you, provides for you, knows you and cares for you. Act and speak in furtherance of these truths. This step in faith and trust is the bridging of the gap between what you say is true and what you really know is true. And then God's outpouring of blessings clasps arms with you, and you experience the fruit of his great love. Much love to each and every one of you. Until next week.
Everybody falls sometimes. Gotta find the strength to rise from the ashes and make a new beginning. Anyone can feel the ache. You think it's more than you can take, but you're stronger, stronger than you know. Don't you give up now. The sun will soon be shining. You gotta face the clouds to find the silver lining. I've seen dreams that move the mountains. Hope that doesn't ever end, even when the sky is falling. I've seen miracles just happen. Silent prayers get answered. Broken hearts become brand new. That's what faith can do. It doesn't matter what you've heard. Impossible's not a word. It's just a reason for someone not to try. Everybody's scared to death when they decide to take that step out on the water. have the strength to rise.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
Have you been the victim of a crime? Did you know you have rights as a crime victim? Where do you turn for support, resources, and empowerment? Victimization does not have to define you as a survivor. Crime Survivor's mission is to provide hope and healing to victims and survivors of crime through advocacy and the support of resources, information, and empowerment from the critical time after a crime occurs through the challenges and successes of surviving and thriving. We at CSI believe that no one should feel abandoned or alone and that every person is deserving of love, respect, and dignity. We believe that the best way to help others with hope and healing is to work in partnership with our community, law enforcement, elected leaders, and members of the media. We believe that all of us together can lift each other out of the darkness and into the light of a restored heart and life. We believe that every broken heart, every hurt, every wound can be healed with love and a strong community of support. We believe in hopeful healing. We believe that with faith, there is always hope. Crime Survivors is there to help. We provide hopeful healing for survivors. If you would like to support this nonprofit organization or are in need of help, please contact Crime Survivors at 949-872-7895 or crimesurvivors@aol.com or log on to www.crimesurvivors.org.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
This is 4 Radio, a media platform used to elevate voices and empower dreams. And now, Coffee Talk with Patricia.
Hello, everyone. It is a beautiful day today, and I wanted to welcome you to Coffee Talk with Patricia. And we want to thank our sponsors and our producer, Maria, for allowing us to have Coffee Talk with Patricia. It is a true gift to be able to share things with you every week, and I hope that you're out there listening. I also would ask that you share Coffee Talk with Patricia with some of your friends or family and ask them to not only listen but to call in with questions. You can always call in to share a little bit about who you are and your life. You can also call and ask me any question that you want. You can call in at 347-857-3760. And I just also want to be able to just say, you know, I hope that you grabbed your cup of hot coffee. Some of you drink tea. Some of you drink other things. But as you know, this is Coffee Talk with Patricia, and I love my coffee. So I have my nice cup of hot coffee sitting here with me that I can enjoy and sip throughout the show. Although sometimes when I do the show, I don't drink very much of my coffee because I think I don't take enough of breaths or space in between my speaking. So I think sometimes I have to be able to say, take a deep breath, take a drink of the coffee, even though the listeners are out there, they'll know what you're doing. So God bless all of you for listening. And I want to go ahead and start today with a prayer. As you know, every show we start with a prayer, and we try to end with a moment of faith and peace at the end of the show. So when I attended my mission these past 3 days, which we're going to talk about today on the show, St. Augustine, the prayer for us was one of the cards that we received, and I'm going to go ahead and read it to you. Prayer to know my vocation in life. Do you know what your vocation is? O God, in baptism, you called me by name, making me a member of your people, the church. I praise you for your goodness. I thank you for your gifts. Father, look upon your church with love. Bless your people with generous single men and women, with loving wives and husbands, with understanding parents, with trusting children, and with dedicated priests, sisters, deacons, and brothers. Father, grant me the grace to know your will in my own life. Help me to discern my own vocation, my call, and embrace it freely and generously as I journey towards you. You have called me not to set me apart, but to bring me together with all my brothers and sisters in this world who need your love. Make me a faithful sign of your presence in your midst. Strengthen me to live in love and service to others after the example of Jesus, your Son. I make this prayer in your holy name. Amen. And Father Tom McCarthy actually did our three-day mission, and so I'm so grateful to have been able to not only meet him, but to be able to sit through the mission that was so empowering. And, you know, it's interesting because many of you that are listening, if you know me, you know that I don't take a lot of time for myself or for things like this. I do go to church every Sunday, and I do reflect and pray every morning and throughout the day because, as you know, my faith is very important. It is what I walk and what I preach every day. And whatever your faith is when you're listening, I am Catholic. I am proud to be Catholic. But whatever your faith is, that's great. I hope that you're walking and standing strong within your own faith. But Father McCarthy, it was really good. He's an amazing speaker that traveled from Chicago, which is kind of interesting because Illinois is my hometown. And so many of the things that he said and talked about resonated with me in my own personal life. Several times I was sitting there and I was thinking that he was actually directing things completely directed towards me and my life. It was very impactful and empowering. And he kept saying about, why are you here? You're here because the Lord wants you to be here. And because I kept saying, how was it? I changed my schedule to make sure that I could be there. I felt such a calling. There's like really no words to say the calling that I had felt to be at this three-day mission. And every time he repeated throughout the mission about, why are you here? Do you know why you're here? You're here because the Lord wants you to be here. And so for me, I believe that the Lord did want me to be there. I was there. And I think it has removed a lot. I feel like it's kind of removed 500 pounds off of my heart and my soul and my body. And it has cleared my mind to be able to be open on this journey more so than ever. Last year, we talked a lot about me being on this journey, but now I think it's not only a journey, but it's really a calling. And it's interesting that the mission, when they sent out the information, it was called Life, the Restless Journey Towards God. Am I fighting or embracing the journey? And as we talked last year, I didn't even know about this mission. I didn't know the name of it. And then, excuse me, and then to be able to have that Life, the Restless Journey Towards God, I feel like that journey is so important, not only to myself, but to my family, to my friends, to people that I work with each and every day. I know not everybody is open to it. And should I not say anything to people because they're not open or they don't believe? I don't think so. I think that even Father McCarthy stated during the mission, you know, many people, they stand on mountaintops to share their faith. A lot of Catholics, a lot of Christians, a lot of other faiths, they don't. They keep it in-house. They keep it to themselves. And I know someone told me, you know, a while back, you know, Patricia, you're always sharing and posting and talking about your faith and your belief. And, you know, God doesn't need you to do that. You don't need to explain or your faith to everyone. But Father McCarthy says otherwise. I think the Pope says otherwise, in my belief. And the Father did say in the mission, we do need to share. We need to share to the ones that listen. We need to share to the ones that don't listen. We need to share to the ones that judge us because we have been chosen by God to be able to preach it, to be able to pray it, to be able to live it, to be able to walk it. And to me, what an empowering, impactful message that is. So yes, I am going to pray it, I'm going to preach it, and I'm going to live it every day. I laugh, and I did post yesterday about the fact of, you know, how so many people have their opinions and their input. And sometimes we are scared away from doing what we want to do, what we believe, because of other people's opinions or judgment or shame or blame. And that's in everything we do. That's in our life. That's in our community work. That's in our careers. That's in our family and our friendships and our faith. So it's a wide variety of everything. But I don't think we should be afraid. I think we need to learn how to speak it. I think we need to learn how to say things in a diplomat way without offending anyone. But I don't think that we should be silenced. And it's kind of funny. I didn't laugh at this a long time ago when someone brought this up. But for some reason, recently someone said to me, are you becoming a holy roller? You're like all into your faith and this journey. Excuse me. Sorry, I'm losing my voice again today. But so they're saying, you know, are you carried away on your journey? Like you keep getting, like you're talking about it. You're talking about your journey, your religion, your God stuff is what they said, God stuff. And that some may start thinking that you're crazy by preaching all of your religion and your faith, and I just think you're getting carried away with it. And so for one person to tell me I'm a holy roller and the other person to tell me that I'm getting carried away with my faith was quite interesting to me, because I really truly feel as if, no, I'm not getting carried away. No, I'm not a holy roller, but if you want to think that, it's kind of funny to me, to be honest, because I'm okay with that. I'm okay with people thinking that I'm crazy. I'm okay with people thinking whatever, because I don't need justification from them. I need the justification and the validation from the Lord, and that I truly know and believe that I have. So for all of you out there that think I'm a holy roller, amen to that. I walk it proud. I'm thinking maybe I should get some shirts made and a hat and some pens and some other promotional items, and I should just start passing it out to people and say, here I am, Patricia the Holy Roller.
Okay, I got to break in, okay, because I'm telling you, we're undercover nuns, Patricia. We're undercover nuns.
And that's funny that you say undercover nuns, because as I was sitting in the mission and the father was also saying, which was impactful to me for a huge reason, but he didn't say one or two or five. He said 10. He said, if you've been doing something for 10 years and you've been on this journey for 10 years, don't be afraid to change your journey. Don't be afraid to open up for new things, because just because the Lord had you do something for 10 years doesn't mean you have to do it for 20. You may have a new journey. You may have a new calling. Be open to the change. Be open to the new journey. And then he stopped and then he said, and that new journey could be you may want to become a nun, a priest, a deacon, or a server in your church. And I was just like, I was so wanting to crack up out loud when he said that.
Wait a minute. Yesterday, someone introduced me to a whole ministry of Catholic women that are being ordained as Catholic priests right now. I think I sent you the thing, didn't I?
Well, you did, and I actually had been laughing quite a bit with my friends, because I've been kept saying to them, you know, since this new pope took over and he talked about how he wants more women involved in the church, I thought, maybe that's my calling. I need to go become a nun.
I'm freaking out right now, because remember, God's been telling me to come back to the Catholic Church since 2006 or 2007, and I'm kind of going, okay, you got, really, because of my history, you know it. But it is, once you're Catholic, Patricia, I don't think you can ever not be. And I mean, really, when you're born and raised and you put your kids through the school, and I think you're right. I think those who really love the Lord, that really were based in our Catholic foundations, some of us are being called, and how crazy do I feel about that? So how crazy do you feel about that?
Well, I do, because, I mean, listen, I've always walked in my faith. My faith has always, always gotten me through. I've always said, I don't know how people get through without some faith, but it's always been, but it's never been the way it is now. It is in my entire being, and I don't know, you know, some people would say, well, that means God's getting you ready for something, and it could be huge, it could be something really good, it could be something bad, it could be anything, but I truly believe that with faith, again, there's hope. You can survive whatever you endure in your life, and you, at one point, I think now is I had faith, but now I trust it. So I can walk it and trust it, and I think that is really a huge component.
Yeah, and it took 10 years to really, really dig your feet in that, and I've watched it. So sorry for interrupting, but oh my gosh, your faith, and I really believe that God is calling some of us to a higher purpose. But Patricia, you've got many that are watching. You've got many that are paying attention to everything that you're doing. So your calling, and this is why this platform is important, and if you decide to keep going here, I want it to go further, because you have what it takes. You have, I've watched you for 10 years in awe, because you've got it, and maybe that is it, and maybe you are called to step on this platform and really speak, because we're not crazy Christians. We're just people that really get it, that understand that you can trust it with, and it isn't crazy holy roller things. It just is living and life and forgiveness and love, and this is what you have been preaching, whether you believe you've been preaching it or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that, because I really do feel like the calling, and you know, I did surrender my life, and I did say to the Lord, you know, whatever is supposed to be is going to be. I've stepped away from a lot of things because I have made a commitment and a trust and a dedication to myself and to my faith for the year of 2014. And I'm not saying anything about 2015 right now. I'm saying 2014. There were several things that I've had to step away from, and I did. There are several things that I'm still undecided, so I'm still going with it, but I did surrender it to the Lord to say, please, call me in that direction if that's where I'm supposed to be. Take me on the journey, and I trust you wholeheartedly, and I know that whatever I am meant to do this year, whether it's in my career, whether it's in my community, whether it's in my life and my family and my friendships, whether whatever relationship it is, call me. And call me, text me, email me, Facebook me. You know, if you have to, I don't know, you know, come right in front of my face in order for me to get it and to see it, go ahead and do it, because I really do feel, and it's kind of like a calling, here I am. Here I am, Lord. Show me my way. Show me my direction. Show me my path on this journey. But I also don't want to just say, show me and call me. I want to be able to say to the people that I love and that I care about and to everybody else to please, I know for even 10 years I have avoided my relationships. I have avoided friendships. I've avoided family. I've avoided self. I've avoided love. I have done everything I can to step outside myself to help others for 10 years. And now this 2014 is a year of Patricia. It has to be a year of faith and family and friendship and love. And to be able to open up to why do I personally still have a lot of pain, a lot of anger, a lot of resentment. And even though I have forgiven wholeheartedly, there are still things in my heart and soul that I need to accept, I need to work on, I need to move on from, and I need to be able to not punish myself anymore for other people's behaviors and actions, or even for myself. When you look back at your past, and this was one of the things that we spoke about in the mission, looking back in the past, everything is in sync. There is no coincidence. The worst of the worst, the best of the best, there are no coincidences. God has the control. He is taking us through this journey. And a lot of times that is very, very hard to accept, especially in the community work that I do because, you know, children are murdered and people are victimized and people are homeless or mentally ill. And how do you justify that? How do you think that? But there is a reason. There are no coincidences. And a lot of good can come out of a lot of the tragedies and the traumas. But how do we stop blaming and shaming or punishing ourselves? How do we let our dreams go because we don't feel worthy? And how do we work through that? But if you look through your past, and the Father McCarthy walked through some of his past and resonated a great deal with me, because when you look back, and I'll use for an example, and really, if you're listening, take the time over this weekend or the next week or the next month and really look back at your past. Look back at things like, what did you do sports? What did you do for hobbies? What did you do in English class? What did you do to volunteer or in your family or your first job? Or were you bullied, or did you bully someone in high school? Did you make some mistakes in some relationships? Did you drink or do drugs? Did you do different, whatever it may be, look at your past and then look at where you're at today. Not only today on your journey, but in your future, but today. How does what you're doing today represent and still be part of what you did in the past? And I'll use this as an example. I have so many of examples that actually resonated with me and that I had just like hit me like I got hit by a Mack truck. But one example is this, and it's kind of a funny one, because as soon as he was talking about that and as soon as he was talking about his own personal connection between the past and now, the instantaneous thing that came to mind was when I was a brownie and a Girl Scout in school. And when I was young, and thinking about how I was always the one to maybe have most of the patches. I always wanted to get every patch I could possibly get to put on my little sash. And always wore the uniform proudly and wanted to attend all the meetings. And I was the number one Girl Scout cookie seller, and got my patch and always wanted to strive for more and always wanted to be, like, in, I guess, competition. I wanted to be a perfectionist in a sense. So as he was talking through this mission and talking about, you know, how does the past, that is what popped into my head, and that's what came to me. And then I kind of giggle now because I think about, how did that Girl Scout experience, where am I at today with that experience? And the funny thing is I am a bit of a perfectionist or a pesty pain in the you-know-what, but I get things done. And I think not only being a Girl Scout taught me so much in my life, but now it gives me the thing of where I'm at today with community service, with giving, with wanting to achieve more, raise more money, have more programs, have more services, do more, and respect and treat other people in a certain way. So it's interesting how my past is a huge part of who I am today. And there are some things that, another example, you know, I made mistakes in my life. I know it's hard for you all to believe, but I did have a wild side, and I did make mistakes in my past. But through this mission, I have learned that 44 years of making sins and making mistakes and having flaws and not being perfect, that we are all imperfect until we get to heaven. And God makes us perfect at that moment. And we all sin. Every single person sins. Even the Pope said recently he sins. So we all do sin. But we all don't have to live a life blaming and shaming ourselves or other people. We can also find forgiveness, not only for others, but for ourselves. And again, I stress, forgiveness is not earned, it's given. Forgiveness is not so much for the other person, it's for yourself to be able to heal and to have hope and to live your life happy every single day. And to be able to say, for me, 44 years I've lived with mistakes and flaws and imperfections. But one of the biggest things that impacted me on this mission was I have been denying myself so much in my life because of my mistakes and sins and flaws. When the Lord has already forgiven me, I've already sought forgiveness, but not only did I ask for all these years of things that I have made mistakes of, I've went to confession and I've asked the Lord for forgiveness. But I look at my past on some of the things, and it's interesting how today I've been drawn back to those people or those individuals to seek not only forgiveness, but to make up for what I've done. And so it's very interesting when you look back at your past, how you're called back in certain areas. And one thing that I felt like overwhelming, and I had my notepad in my mission, and I took so many notes and just jotted down everything. I felt like I was like a sponge in there. And so it's really interesting because I did say I'm denying myself, I'm punishing myself for so many things, but yet I have been forgiven and I can move on. And as I was writing things down and talking about it and going through it again, reading it over and over again, is being able to realize one of the things that, you know, in my past, it was like so interesting as if the Lord had the pen at one point. Because, you know, I grew up, I was born in Princeton, Illinois. I grew up in La Salle, Peru, and then Spring Valley area back in Illinois. And some of the things that happened to me as a little girl, some of the things that happened to me throughout my life and things that I've done, good, bad, or the ugly, it was interesting because one of the notes I didn't even realize I wrote down on the piece of paper said, you must revisit Illinois. You must go to Princeton. You must go to Rockford. You must go to LaSalle, Peru, Dalzell, and Spring Valley. You have to be there. You are being called. You will not know until you are reach that those cities. And it actually gives me goosebumps right now. It actually almost brings tears to my eyes. And some of it I know why. Some of it I have no idea why I will be called back there. But I do know that I'm going to make a commitment, and it will be very difficult, but I am going to follow the Lord's penmanship, and I'm going to make a visit to Illinois this year, and I'm going to go to those cities. And I think the reason why I'm going to be called there is because I need closure, and I know a lot of people don't like the word closure, especially in certain circumstances, but I feel called to go back there this year and to come to terms with a lot of my past. And to be able to move on. And I think that it is going to be impactful and powerful. And so I ask that you look towards your past and see what is your calling that is stopping you or preventing you from happiness and joy and peace and success and whatever it may be in your life that you're denying or lacking, find it, discover it, look for it on this journey that you are embracing each and every day. And I share myself and I share my world and I share things with you that I'm hoping as I'm talking, it's resonating with you. Similar to what Father Tom McCarthy was saying about his personal experiences, resonated with me not only by what his story was, but by what my story was and what my story is. So I ask that you listen to me, but take it within your own life, with your own faith, with your own story, and look at your past. Don't prevent yourself. Don't punish yourself anymore. God loves you. God forgives you. God validates you. Live it, breathe it, walk it every single day in your life. You know, when you think about it, have you ever met someone that has experienced one tragedy after another in their life? Yet, when you look at them, when you talk to them, when you hear them, they're the most happiest people that you work with or talk to or live with or whatever, that they're happy. Do you know why? Do you know why they're happy? Even after all the tragedies or all the traumas or all the different things that they've walked with in their life? That was a huge thing that I also, you know, just think about. Because I have been through a lot in my life, and I do feel happy. But the only thing I can say is for people that experience one tragedy after another, one trauma, one negative experience, is faith. Faith is what makes them happy. The Lord is what is in their hearts and in their souls, and that they are happy because they know that they are making a choice. They're choosing their faith. They're choosing the Lord. They're trusting. Again, that word is to trust. Trust in the Lord. Trust in yourself. He's not going to hurt you. He's not going to let you down. No matter what happens, what the circumstances is in life, walk it, live it, and believe it. Trust your calling. We all have a calling, with or without faith, with or without a job, with or without community, with or without love or relationships or family or friendship, no matter what, you have a calling. Allow it, welcome it, appreciate it, and most importantly, trust in yourself and trust in the Lord. One of the other things that he talked about is, and one of the things that he had said, and a lot of these things, if you go on my Facebook page, you'll see a lot of these postings that I already posted, and I'm just sharing them with you today, but these are things that I also have really were like the major impacts in this mission. Something that I do may have a rippling effect, and I hope whatever I do, whether it be small or large, that it does have a rippling effect in someone else's life, and then they have it in someone else's life. So whether it's doing good or getting out there in the community or just doing something in my job, whatever it may be, I hope what you do as well. And when you have the intent of wanting to make sure whatever you do each and every day that it does have a rippling effect, not for recognition, not for awards, not to be on the TV or the news or the media, not to get a big plaque or a trophy, but just to be able to do good and just for it to be able to affect many others in their life, in their walk, in their path, again, whether it be in their career, whether it be in community giving, whether it be in faith, whatever that may be. I ask you to really think about that when you are making when you're choosing and making choices in your life, whether it be in faith or anything, that it does have a rippling effect. One of the other things too is Father McCarthy really stressed this, and this was really impactful, and I hope it's impactful to you. And I know it really has opened my eyes. Is don't live a miserable life. And don't be a miserable person. Are you thinking, well, I'm not miserable? Well, think about it. You know, did someone cut you off on the freeway and all of a sudden you're using profanities and screaming and cussing at them and everything else? That's a miserable person. You're miserable. Why are you angry at that person? We don't know what happened to that person. We don't know if maybe they didn't cut you off. Maybe they just didn't see you. Maybe you can stop and pray for them. Maybe they had just got a divorce, or maybe they were, you know, just lost their money for whatever reason. It lost their job. You don't know. But don't be a miserable person. Don't gossip about other people, because when you're gossiping, you're miserable. There's something wrong within your heart and soul that you need to go gossip and talk negative about anybody. Even if the other person is miserable, you don't need to gossip or talk about them. Don't bully people. Bullies are miserable people. There's something wrong. And instead of being a bully, embrace and protect another human being. And don't be afraid. He used one story as an example in reference to a big football player that another student was bullying someone at the, I think it was a soda machine, and some kid went up and to get a soda, and the other kid came behind him and actually took his soda and drank it, and then everybody was laughing and the kid was without a soda. And so the big football player, maybe 300 pounds, you know, big bulky guy, came walking down, took the soda can out of the one kid that took it away from the other kid's hands, went over to the soda machine and made him buy the other kid a soda, and said, don't ever do that again. Now, followed by the fact that he could have done anything. He was a football player. He could have joined in with everybody else laughing and making fun out of the other kid that was considered a nerd or something. And, you know, he didn't have to do that. He was the only one that actually stood up for this kid that was being bullied. And, you know, he had a calling. He had his calling to protect and not live a miserable life. And hopefully he had a rippling effect to make a huge impact with not only all the other students, but to make a huge impact in that one person's life to stop that bullying. And then Father McCarthy shared at the end of that was the fact that that football player that protected that other person ended up losing his life at the age of 19. And so he was called to the Lord, and he was accepted for whatever reason. We don't know. But he was not going to live a miserable life while he was here, and he was not going to allow people to be bullied. So don't live a miserable life. And if other people are bullying or victimizing or hurting someone else, stand up for them. Even if they're not your friends, even if they're not your family, stand up. Be a happy person, because we are only here for a short time. You need to release the pain and the anger, and you need to find forgiveness for others and for yourself, because you are worthy, and all these other people are worthy. You can live a life of happiness. And let me tell you, when you find happiness in your heart and in your soul, there is nothing that can be compared. No money can change that. No money can offer you happiness or love. No money can give you a calling. No love can give you a life on your journey to the Lord. So find that. Think about that. That's another thing that you should really think about, not living a miserable life. No matter what happened in your life, the worst of the worst circumstances, you still don't have to be miserable. You can be happy. You can smile. You can live life. And when you're called, like this football player that he went to the Lord, his family is living a life and living happily, and he's at peace. Because as you know, whether you're taken by cancer, whether you're taken by a car accident, whether you're taken by murder, whether you're a child or a teenager or an adult or an elderly person that has lived a full life, it doesn't matter. When you reach heaven, when the Lord comes to take you, you don't have anger. You don't have resentment. You don't have fear any longer. So if you're still here and your loved one is in heaven for whatever reason, truly know that they're not suffering, that they are happy, 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 and they want you here on earth to be happy. They don't want you to be in pain. They don't want you to live a miserable life. They don't want you to be angry. So take this moment to embrace that. Never forget your loved ones. You're never going to forget that. But keep their legacy alive in happiness. Because when you're angry and you're out there pushing and pushing and pushing that in a miserable way, that means that their legacy is being remembered in a miserable way. And you don't want that. You don't want that at all. You want their memory to be of happiness and of the good times and of the memories. So take that time, not only for yourself, but for your loved ones that have gone on, or share it with your friends and family and let them know. Don't live a miserable life. Don't cuss and scream at other people. Don't be a bully. Don't get on the phone with the telemarketers and you know, hang up on them and yell and scream at them. Even though it might make them more angrier, let them know that you're going to pray for them, because you don't know what other people are walking in their life or in their path. So, again, don't live a miserable life. That's something that definitely came out of the mission for me as well. One of the other things is fear is a thief. When the Father said that, that was so impactful to me. Fear is a thief. And what do you mean by that? What is fear is robbing you in your life? Don't be robbed anymore. And that's, I think, impactful for me, is because fear has stopped and prevented so much in my life. And, you know, like now I want to go get a pair of handcuffs and just go ahead and arrest the fear and send them out of my life and, you know, lock them up someplace else because they don't belong in my life.
Okay, Patricia?
Yes?
I do have a question. And, you know, we've been walking this path for a long time, and we've had coffee with each other, and we've talked about this topic for a long time. And part of the reason why dating is such a hard thing is because I think both of us have this fear of dating. And as you know, the love of my life came back into my life. And I find myself, as I'm listening to your show, and I'm taking the steps that you and I have talked about, you first, know you first, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm finding myself petrified in fear, and I can feel myself, even as we're talking, and so there's no coincidence that you're speaking about all this right now, because everything in me...
No coincidences, no coincidences.
Oh my gosh, no. Everything in me, and again, we're not even talking about a relationship, okay? I'm just talking about opening up my heart and my emotional system in a way that I haven't in 10 years. And it is a petrifying fear, and everything in me wants to slam it all shut. And this is why I've said you first all these years. So how do we walk through this? And again, I'm not in any relationship with anybody. I'm just thinking about what it might feel like to be vulnerable, and I don't like it. The fear is petrifying. And again, Patricia, I'm not even in a relationship with anybody. So how do women who have walked through this path deal, and we've got the faith, we know that his promises are true, but wow, when it's petrifying you to this degree where you want to believe all the things that are being said in your head, how do you get past it? Here I am. I did it first. So what do I do now?
Well, and that's what you have to say, though. And that's what you have to say. And listen, I'm no expert in anything. I mean, the Lord is guiding me and directing me. So I'm no relationship expert. I haven't been in a relationship. And I'm going to be writing, that's one of the shows, not next week, but the following week, I'm going to talk about relationships. And I'm going to be talking about why some women never have the dream of wearing a white dress. And in relationships, why do we not allow love after we have been hurt or devastated or pained? And all I can say to you is that fear is the enemy also. And you have a calling in a relationship right now, and you have opportunities and chance on this journey to embrace it and to love it and to welcome it and to be able to accept that you say, here I am. If this relationship is meant to be, the Lord will let it be. And you are allowing fear to be a thief, and you need to release the thief in your heart and in your soul, nowhere else. You need to say to yourself, and you need to believe it, and you need to trust it, and to say in a sense that, is there a possibility that you could be hurt? Yes. Do you know what hurt feels like? You absolutely do. But love is greater than that hurt. Love is greater than that fear. And we have robbed ourselves. We have robbed ourselves of the love, of the beauty, of the acceptance, of not only loving ourselves, but being able to allow someone to come into our space to love us without judgment, without hurt or pain. Because I know you, and I know you've probably already, you could meet someone and you could think, oh, they're nice to me, but they're going to hurt me. But that's not always true. We can't judge others because of what other people did to us. And we can't be robbed anymore. You are a woman that is deserving of love and respect. And you don't have to fear it anymore. You don't have to allow the thief to take your heart. You have to allow a man to take your heart. Why? Because he loves you and the Lord wants you to be able to have love. And everyone is worthy of love. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what you walk. It doesn't matter the circumstances. And we can't change the past. But by gosh, we do have a right to change our journey for our love and to be able to welcome it without the fear robbing us.
True. Well, here we go. It's an interesting ride.
It'll be an interesting ride, but only you can allow the ride, but really it's not a ride. It's a journey. The ride has to change for you into a journey of being able to say, life is love. The Lord loves me. The Lord, if he wants me to have love and happiness and acceptance, he's going to guide it. He's going to protect me. and I don't want to judge the past anymore. I want to only live the Savior today, today and tomorrow on this journey. So you are deserving. You are worthy. You can have love without pain and without fear. And is it going to be like you're a little girl? Yes, because now when I even talk about it, like even this last, after this mission, I myself have said, no, I'm going to be open for it. More so now, I mean, I've talked about it maybe the last year about being open to dating and stuff, but I don't think I ever was really open to it. Until now, after this mission, I am open to it without fear. And I know that I am deserving of it for the first time in my life. I know why I have prevented and punished myself and why I didn't want love. But I think that the Lord wants it for us, and I know that for sure. And it's also going to be like, just even since I've been talking about it, it's, and I know you're probably on the same path as maybe some other listeners are. I even mentioned this to somebody the other day, and I said, you know, I'm open to it more so now than ever. But part of me almost feels like I'm desperate, but I'm not desperate because I'm not going to settle for anything or anybody. But I almost feel like a five-year-old little girl, like you get, you know, your face turns red or you get giddy and you're like, I don't know how to act and how's dating going to be? And that's a whole nother subject in itself, is how, as women, when we were feared into it, how do we now be mature women dating?
Well,
so go ahead.
The problem is really, did you ever really date?
No.
See, okay, this is the problem. I think we both have. I dated Rick Acaba, the NASA, Joe, his brother is the NASA astronaut, from 15, 16, 17, 18. Good Catholic guy. We went to church every Saturday night. We didn't go anywhere. I never partied. I never went to any high school parties. And then the day we broke up was on a Friday night, and I went to traffic school on Saturday and met both of my husbands. Moved
yeah,
in.
That's tough.
Yeah. Yeah, moved in with my first husband 3 weeks after I met him. So I never dated. So how do you date as a mature woman who's in love with the Lord, who's no means no until I say yes? And how do you do it in this day and age? That is a huge, huge issue. And do we talk about it as single women? Do married women talk about it? I mean, how do you date, Patricia? How do you date?
Well, I think, though, there's so many different questions within one question, is how do you date? But I think it goes back to how do you date and how do you allow yourself to trust yourself? Because I think, again, it comes back to the trust and it comes back to faith. Being able to, if you've been hurt in a relationship, and I do believe that if you've been a victim of a crime or whatever, I think that you doubt yourself that you're not going to be able to say no, or you don't know how to, so you're just going to let it happen, whatever. I think when you get to a point to where you, again, trust in the Lord, but trust in yourself,
yeah,
and don't settle for anything.
I think that's what it is, because I think, and again, when you get to this level where you and I have talked about this till we're blue in the face, so we have the knowledge and we're not ignorant to anything anymore. So making wrong choices is not an option at this level. And trusting ourselves to make the right choice with the next person that you allow in your space, that is what I think. I mean, is it the right person? Is it not the right person? I mean, pretty sure it's not the right person. So even walking through, just letting it happen, even when you know it's not the right person, but you're allowed, not going, you being in a controlled environment and learning how to trust yourself, is that dating?
Well, you're going to make mistakes, though, and I made a mistake not too long ago, too, and it's you do have to make mistakes, but you have to look at the past and you have to think back. Nothing is a coincidence. Nothing is a coincidence, even in dating. So if you get into a circumstance, in a situation, the thing is do you learn from it? Do you go on a date and do you say something or do something that you regret or you weren't ready for or whatever it may be? Look at that as an opportunity to learn and to grow, because as we've also talked about, the Lord has someone for everyone. that I do believe now and I do trust that. And so when someone comes and you go out and you date and that's not the right one and that's not the right one, he's still perfecting the one that is for you. So that you can also trust that.
Well,
but you,
we must have some gems coming our way, Patricia.
Well, you know, and I think, but I think that you get to a certain point. Some of us have gotten to the fact that, I mean, for a long time, I thought that I was not worthy or deserving of it. And I thought that, you know, because of whatever, I needed to either, you know, God didn't want me to have love. God didn't want me to, he wants me to be by myself. But I don't believe that anymore. And through this mission, I think that I have learned also, and I hope that, you know, I can help other people to be able to share my circumstances, that it will resonate with you and others. And again, I'm no expert, and especially on dating, but I do know that the Lord wants us all to have love in our hearts and souls, and not only by him, but by a significant other, as well as by ourselves. And it all starts with loving and trusting the Lord, loving and trusting ourselves, and being open and willing to love and trust another to come into our space, realizing that we may be hurt, but hurt is also a part of living. We can't be feared by it. We can't let it rob us because of what if it happens. Because when we say what if it happens, that means it's already happened. So we have to stop that thinking. We have to make the choice to be able to say, I can be loved, I can have a job, I can have a career, I can do the good in the community, but don't doubt it, because once you doubt it, you've already set yourself up for fear and failure. Switch it. Change it today. Take the time to say, the Lord loves me, he wants me to love myself, and he wants me to be loved by another, and I trust it, and I'm open to it. That's all you have to say. Don't doubt it. Don't question it. Move on from all of the doubt and the questioning. Doesn't even have time in our life, and that's all part of spiritual warfare anyway. So for me, I say stop it today and move on from it and put it on top of your refrigerator or put it in your mirror in the bathroom and just say that. Say, the Lord loves me, I love myself, and I welcome love into my heart and soul. Now can I get an amen? So, relationship.
I was on mute. Amen. You.
So make the choice and choose today. It is in your control. It is in your power, and only you can make that choice. And, you know, we will, again, like I said, I will talk about this again on a future show, just relationships in general, and I will share a lot about my life and love and what my feelings are and why some of the madness in my life and relationships have been so strong and had a strong hold on me, but they no longer do, so... Remember that you're thinking about your past. You're thinking about some of the things that I shared with you today on how it's resonated with you in your life, and look back at the past and what you're doing today and how you're going to get to your tomorrow, and that there are no coincidences. Remember that. Also, remember that life, the restless journey towards God, has got to be the most important thing, is to be able to seek acceptance and forgiveness in your life. And am I fighting or embracing the journey? And so that goes to, again, that goes to your career, that goes to your community, that talks about your faith, that talks about your life, your family, and your friendships. Are you fighting it? And why are you fighting embracing that journey? Why are you fighting to have love in your life? Why are you fighting to have more time with family or friends? Why are you coming up with excuses that you can't go out and do something for your community, whether it's writing a check or volunteering with the animal clinic or the children's hospital or the mission or, you know, crime survivors or some other organization out there, whatever's calling you? I think that we do have a calling. Not only do we have a calling to the Lord, we have a calling for a career. We have a calling for community giving. We have a calling for faith and religion. And we have a calling for ourselves in all of those things. But until we're open and acknowledge and recognize it, we cannot have it. We have to trust it. And we have to say, here's the calling. Here I am, Lord. work through me, work in me, work within me, whatever you say, find it and allow the journey to come for you in your life. Don't be so hard on yourself. Don't live a miserable life. Find somehow to be able to embrace your past for your present, to live your life for your future. That is what I really, really stress the most of. I hope you do, because I want everybody to live happiness in their life. I want to be happy. I want other people to be happy. I want everyone to be able to have hope. And I want people to have happiness and hope, and I want people to have faith without judgment or living miserably. And if people are talking about you, if people are calling you names, if people are saying you're a holy roller, whatever it may be, just let it go, because you can't control them. They only have the Lord to answer to. You just have to pray for them. Pray for them, bless them. Just be open to that. And are you willing, like if there's miserable people in your life, and if you've been a miserable person up until today, and miserable could be just one part of your life. It doesn't have to be the entire part. But are you willing to say you're sorry, and can you accept an apology? I think that is so impactful in our lives is, you know, I can say I'm sorry for 44 years of wrongdoings or for sins or for whatever it may be. Now, the Lord knows that I am sincere when I say that. He knows it and he believes it. Other people may laugh at it and think whatever they want, but that's fine because I seek forgiveness and acceptance from the Lord and only the Lord. That I know he validates me, and I hope that you walk that and that you believe that for yourself and in your life. Because if you're sincerely sorry without any harm to anyone else or to yourself or to the faith, it allows you to clear the path to live each and every day of happiness in your life. So think about that. Think about your journey. Think about releasing the guilt and the shame and the blame and the anger and the revenge so that you don't live with fear every day. I don't want to live thinking that I'm going to walk outside my house and I'm going to get hit by a bus falling out of the sky. And again, I say that it's only a metaphor, people. I know there's no buses up there in the sky. At least I don't think so. But it's the idea that anything could happen at any point, any second. Me sitting here on the phone to you, something could happen, something amazing or something awful. But I don't want to live in fear anymore. I have lived 44 years of fear, and not until I was on this mission did I realize it, that I have been living in fear and pain for way too long, and I am not allowing it anymore. And I thank Father Tom McCarthy, I thank my church, and I thank the Lord, most importantly, I thank him for getting me to that mission, because it has released. Like I said, it feels like over 500 pounds, but I look in the mirror and I know I didn't lose 500 pounds, but I know my pants are still a little bit snug, but I really do feel like there has been a weight lifted. And if I can, I mean, I actually have tears in my eyes when I'm speaking to you about it because I feel so overwhelmed and so joyed and so rejoiced and peaceful that I don't have to live in fear. I don't have to live in anger and resentment anymore. I know the Lord is loving me and guiding me and calling me, and I also don't fear death anymore because I feel to me that when I get to heaven, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to get to heaven, and I believe that that is going to be spectacular. So I fought to survive. I've healed. I have hope. But I have no more fear, and no more fear of individuals, no more fear of change, and change could be in my career, it could be in anything. So I want you all to listen today and not be afraid anymore to live your life. I want to say God bless all of you. Find a mission, find your faith, find hope, and live your life without any anger or resentment. I will share more of this on a future show. There is so much more to share with all of you, but have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. May God bless all of you and live each and every day happy without fear. Take the time to tell other people that you love them. Don't be a bully. Let the Lord guide you and protect you. May God bless you. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk next week.
ForRadio.com.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
This is For Radio, a media platform used to elevate voices and empower dreams. And now, Women on the Edge with Becky Ryan.
Hello, everybody. Good morning. It is an awesome Friday in January, and I am Becky Ryan. We have moved our spots to a new, fun, very chilly, breezy day in Atlanta. Is Maria DiGiovanni there?
Yes, I am. Good morning. Good morning to the East Coast from the West Coast.
Yes, very early for you. To me, it's just 1 o'clock, but it is a start of a phenomenal weekend. And Maria is not only my producer, she has been a guide and a mentor for pretty much a decade now.
I know, isn't that crazy?
And my co-host, so... Besides being my husband, my husband still has a space in there. I can't... My kids. Wow, we're multidimensional. Everybody can have their areas.
That's right.
They take up a big portion of my evolution, and I have been listening to healing through prayer, through Corrine. Oh, my gosh. She really has some spiritual solutions. And if you don't mind, I kind of would like to lead with some of the stuff she was ending with.
Yeah,
is that
go
all
ahead.
Right, Maria?
Yeah, take okay. it.
Now, she had her reasons for going in there more on the spiritual solutions of different people, and I want to take it to more of a global level, not just the individual person on looking back on your past. I wanted to kind of hit some of the things that she was saying about, you know, don't lead an unhappy or miserable life, right? That's
right.
History, and we're about to go into a series, and I'm going to lead with this. History brings us to this exact moment. We can't change that. No matter what, history did do that. And I think that's kind of an eye-opener. It doesn't define us. It might define us for this moment. It might have shaped today and this present moment, how we're thinking. But at any moment, we can go and change it. Do not let history control us or who we wish to be. Our future is our choice. It's not history's destiny. History's destiny is yesterday. History's destiny was a few minutes ago. History is history. And it might even be his story, her story. But a lot of us get wrapped up on what our past is, and Corrine really hits it that, you know, even through God, we can change. And Obama is everywhere. And if you go on to Women on the Edge on our Facebook, we have the highlights quoted all the way through about Obama talking about NSA and his steps. And in the past, on Thursdays, we have been talking about this since June of 2012, about what NSA is doing, how it's collecting data. And Obama
right.
basically talked about the metadata. That was the very first thing. He said it was only taking metadata. It was only taking who you're calling, how many minutes. So right now we have Rush Limbaugh, we have all the Fox people chiming in. He really didn't talk about how NSA has been found not to save one U.S. American, not to predict one tragedy, He just basically said, well, we're going to stay into collecting phone data, and we will respect our allies. And he also had some quotes in there about how we have trust. And I want to go back to what Corrine said. Well, when we're judging someone else, let's look at their history.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
I'm sorry, as an American, if you were to judge all Americans, I wouldn't trust us.
Yeah,
all the stuff that has come up because of Snowden. Go on.
Yeah, no. It's, you know, I get a really clear perspective dealing with international women, okay? And the level of women that I deal with is pretty high, and they're dealing with their own governments. And the perspective that they have of our country, and it's been this way, Becky, since I was in Greece when 9/11 happened. And since then, but I have to tell you, the whole country, or the whole world, thought Obama was going to do something that was going to be better for the world. And that didn't happen. And when that didn't happen, it really put a damper on the perspective that others have on the U.S.
Absolutely. And if we look back at history, right now we have reports of 90 million able-bodied Americans unemployed, unable to have the part-time job, full-time job, unable. And the biggest and the first time we could ever even think of this, we have able-bodied people with no children on welfare.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason why I'm bringing this up is they had to create a new category because their unemployment benefits have run out, and they're calling them the people who have given up looking for jobs.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a Republican, a Tea Party, a Democrat thing, but you're saying that they're not looking for a job. They're able-bodied. The jobs aren't there for them. They might, you know, for anybody that has been looking for a job, for those that have a job, for those that have gone into college, you've been skilled. And when you're going in and looking online or asking friends or sending out resumes, you're skilled for a certain set of jobs. And your skill set can cause dead ends. So now you're supposed to go back to school, and they're saying that college is three times more than it was in the 1980s when people made more money. Really scary. But that's where, you know, like, I just wanted to go on the history. It was a good way to lead where we're going. And if you want any of the notes, please, by all means, go on to Women on the Edge. We also have the live feeds that were displayed on Fox and CNN, and I'm sure that they will have a recap on both. But I also wanted to go into President Eisenhower Bush warning about military and not going into the point of looking like a Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm.
When people in government felt more empowered or that they were elected to certain positions, maybe based on their skill set, to take away powers and rights of others.
Mm-hmm.
And we're moving here on to Friday, and it's going to be a little bit more impactful than maybe even on our Thursdays. We're setting up some series, and we're going to be leading into about police brutality. We're going to talk about police officers that are great police officers. But to have to lead in with this history and NSA and abuse of power, I know that there's good officers out there. Today is not the day that I'm going to be highlighting that much. Maria, jump in. Be the devil's advocate. Be the angel here.
Well, here's... You know, it's funny because, again, I think God is bringing us all to where our gifts and talents are. You have a great ability to speak about those things that are extremely important and hot and things that nobody wants to. This is the reason why God gave you the name of Woman on the Edge. And, Becky, you're getting ready to start cracking open an egg that has been trying to be cracked open for a long time, and we're going to use this platform to do it, and we're going to use your name and your face and your voice to do it, because I think those who are around you, who are mentoring you and are your support system, telling you what it is that your gifts are, I think this is it. So you taking on the police and the real issues that we have behind the stress that they are all under is a huge topic. And my perspective, being married to law enforcement for 20 years, two different officers from two very different backgrounds, it's unique because there are a lot of amazing officers out there. They're great. However, we've got an issue with post-traumatic stress disorder, and this is the key, and you're getting ready to crack this open. So really, the question is, how do you feel about it? Because the opposition is overwhelming. So are you ready, and are you armored up to do this?
I don't think anybody would be ready for this challenge. But through God, I think that this needs to be brought out.
Yep.
Both of us have a history with officers totally different, and there's going to be our listeners who have a different perspective, too. I also feel that many of our women on the edge listeners have military sons, daughters,
yep,
fathers, husbands, or currently serving, and I feel that there is a training, and being a peace officer in peace be with them, officer, to go out there and uphold rights of the citizens is what they were set up for. And right now, they're being put into a situation of how much money is coming into the local police departments, the government, how many arrests, how many felonies. And a huge report came out in August that I'd have to go and look up, where it basically showed the more felonies you have, you're guaranteed to move up.
Mm-hmm.
So when an officer is pulling you over for one of those DUI checks, a seatbelt check, whatever check, the only reason that they're there is to get felonies. And we're talking about Michigan in our groups about how Michigan had gone and taken a step with a Sergeant Luke. And this is coming up as a trial is going forward or an investigation about how Michigan has gone and said that if a police officer goes into your home and says that he has reason to believe you could be selling drugs, they can take anything and everything. They just itemize it. It goes into the police department, and it's supposed to be auctioned. Items that have been put on these lists are now reported to have disappeared. People have proven that they weren't distributing or taking. We have some people who had admitted to taking marijuana. One of the a musician has gone forth where the officers were recorded going through his home, outright admitting that they wanted to take and what should they take as they ate his food, as they started taking the equipment, and they had no idea that because the band was in their basement recording a song, the recording equipment was still recording. And the officers came in there, they went through, and they took all the stuff. It has disappeared.
Wow.
This is not good. And we don't need police officers like that's Nazi Germany. I see a parallel of where we're growing into the point of fearing our officers.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there's fear because domestic violence among police officer domestic violence is
huge.
The highest of any industry.
Yeah. And again, that's where I started. Okay. It's funny how we're evolving and really starting to talk about the core, because when God started talking about this, my legal last name is Brame. And when you do your Google search on Officer Brame, you're going to see a huge...
B-R-A-M-E.
Yes.
B-R-A-M-E.
Yeah, it's Bravo, Romeo, Alpha, Michael, Echo. And when you do your Google research on Officer Brame and domestic violence, you're going to see a huge case. And so I thought, okay, that's what I'm going to talk about because my name is Brame and there's $187 million on it that we're going to talk about, you know, during this series. And I'm going to talk about law enforcement officer-involved domestic violence. However, then sadly my life went a little bit deeper because God brings us to a higher level. And it is my second husband that actually was my bigger perpetrator. And he went to prison as a retired officer for sexual abuse. So then I go, okay, we're going to talk about law enforcement officer-involved domestic violence and domestic or sexual abuse, sexual assault, you know. Truly, once I had my vision at 20/20, because hindsight is that, I understand the whole dynamic of, you know, the story. So now it's not just domestic violence or sexual abuse and officers. It's really, truly talking about, you know, the stress that officers are under. And as an officer's wife, I got to see firsthand what these guys go through. And I watched from them really in their infancies of being officers through the 20 years and growing through it and how they started and how they finished. And it's an incredible, incredible thought. So I forgot where I was going with that point, but go ahead, take it back.
But where we're going is that that's where we're leading us today, and we're going to be doing this series. And though I don't, my background, my skill set is not dealing with the situation, I will be the first person to say that when somebody's in crisis, I am action-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not like pondering and going over the past. I like moving forward and having resolution.
Mm-hmm.
If I was a police officer, I think I would really like being a police officer. Boom, I have charged you guilty. I'm taking you down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what I relate to them, but when it comes down to the crisis, we have some people who've been posting about their tragedies of domestic violence, police brutality, sexual abuse. This is not forum for crying about it and what we can do while the crisis is going on or how horrible it is. I outright know it's horrible. I don't.
Yeah,
I don't want to have a comparison.
Yeah, we're that's what I love about four. And this is what I love about everything that we're doing, because you're right. And this is what the accountability, the practical accountability program that we are creating under Dr. Ken Hardy is all about, simply because we've practically...
Please say some more. That was too fast. That was too fast. Say it again.
Say it again.
Because this is extremely important for my listeners, for the listeners of Women on the Edge. This is extremely important.
Four is a vow. Okay, four is about moving forward, okay? We're not therapists. We don't want to be therapists. Not one of us is a therapist. However, we work with therapists diligently because we deal with the women that want to move forward. Yes, that's what the therapists are for, and we direct those people that need to go back, because some of us do. Some of us need to go back because that's where they are on their walk, and so be it, and God bless us all, because sometimes I need to go back. It's just stages like an onion. However, what we're focused on is moving forward. You're right, seeing the problem. We've got an issue. I know there's pain, and pain hurts, so I know your story hurts. You don't have to tell me about it. I get it. I know that the pain is there. We're here to focus on what we're going to do about it. How are we going to get these officers whatever they need to stop being so angry, taking it out on
and
their family?
And we're working with, tell them about what we're working with and what we're putting together right now.
So right now we are putting together the first of its kind under Dr. Kenneth Hardy's watchful eye, okay? We are putting together the first of its kind, a practical accountability coaching program called tobeaccountable.com, number two, big letter B, accountable.com. And under this we are going to have women like me, like you, women who have practically already walked the path. We know what it feels like. We know what it hurts, and excuse the language, but the reason why this works is because you can't BS a BSer. You know what I mean, Becky? And when you are an accountability coach, because you've already walked through it, you know, you understand, so you're going to take their hand, and you're not going to go back with them, because if they want to go back, they go to the therapist. But whatever they get from the therapist, we're going to take their hand, and we're going to walk them through. This is what accountability is all about. This is what this show is going to be all about, to take these women and go, okay, listen, we're in a crisis. These officers, we're in a crisis. Let's walk through this. And the greatest thing about being a practical accountability coach is we get the women and the men that really need and are ready and are sick and tired of being sick and tired and ready to move past the pain, we take them, and it's a great thing that we're not therapists, because we put ourselves on that equal playing field. I don't know more than you. I'm just simply here practically walking you through, and it's working.
And we're saying no. We're saying get up. We're saying you can do it.
Yeah, that's right. Get up.
Here's a tool. This is what we did. Been there, done that. We can move forward.
That's right. That's right. And if you want to cry about the pain, understand it. I know it's there. But let's look at it. If you're going to cry about it, that's cool. But let's look at what you're crying about, okay? Let's look at it. Why is it affecting you today? And if you have to go back, then that's great. We're here to be able to direct them, to direct them. And that's
everybody has stages to go through. And if it just happened, and I'm going to say it just happened. It happened this weekend. I know that history, you know, can be as far back, and depending on post-traumatic stress disorder.
Oh, yeah.
It just happened can be that it happened 3 years ago. If it happened 3 years ago, we need to have some accountability in moving forward so that you're not frozen in time. And being able to be productive human beings and be able to take this moment in your time period that could be carrying on with you since you were a little kid, since you were in high school, since work had happened. There's usually a history of events, but we're talking about take those together and become an overcomer, become an advocate. Start doing things that no longer does it prevent your present moment and your future. You can have anything. And we're here to support you in moving forward. Be a louder consciousness. There's a lot of noise in people's heads. Sometimes you need somebody that's outside of the noise within your head. I wanted to bring up one more thing about, like, officers and their post-traumatic stress disorder. It could have happened from when they were very young. 85% of all the officers involved in domestic violence saw it and were introduced to it at a very young age. To me, that means that quite a few of them grew up seeing domestic violence. And for them to go into the workforce, they're going back out to the war. And to then go home, we have an officer right now that ACLU is going after for anal probing a man, for going to a Walmart. And you know how in front of Walmart stores, there's a little area where people can walk to the front door, and it's usually yellow line, so you're supposed to stop for every person walking by. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
It had a little sign, not a state-issued sign, that said stop. He did a California stop, a Georgia stop, a rolling stop, New York stop.
Hey.
Well, I think New York really stops, though, to be honest. They freeze, so I can't say New York. But the officer pulled him over and ended up anal probing him, videotaping him, defecating.
Oh,
all of
God.
These things, saying that he didn't like the guy because the guy said, you can't stop me for this stop sign. He did. He didn't like being challenged. Can you imagine what this man would do to his family or anybody else that questioned him?
Yeah.
We need these police officers held accountable to a new order. We need them to have more tools. We need them to be able to seek help like the people that they're trying to help. They've had a whole bunch more under the ACLU that have been going about the police brutality, that they've created its own area. Every month they're having charges. Currently, there are 6,000 charges of police misconduct. So much so, they're having a court case. Out of them, we have very few officers that have ever been, I don't know, more of a, maybe they've gotten a paid leave. We don't have too many officers that have lost their job because of how the police system is set up. There's more than 1% of officers every year. There's 59,000 officers on our force in the United States. Another 10 might be coming through within the next couple years. And we have less deaths, but we have 85% of them dealing with domestic violence issues, anger issues, post-traumatic stress disorder that came from the military.
Yep.
Help them. And we can't the abuses.
My main concern is that the bottom line all the way around, and again, having a child who has an officer for a father, there's a cycle going on that needs to stop. It's being protected, and it continues to be protected. And this is what I've seen in the almost 30 years now. 30 years. I met my husband's June of 1984. So it'll be 30 years this year that I've been in the middle of it. Okay? That's a long time, Becky. And, you know, we've got what I want your audience to know, what I want officers to know, what I want their children to know, what I want the wives to understand is that when we go into this series, when we start talking about this, I have worked really diligently to build a good relationship with the female officers organizations the female wives organizations that are out there. We're here to help. We're here to really start helping your husbands, your wives that are out on the field every day, so they can live peaceful, so your children aren't getting, you know, choked out on the way to school and by their fathers, okay? So we've got issues that we really need to talk about. And you've got 2 minutes left, and I can't wait for this series because we've got a problem, and we've got to take care of it. And it's not about pointing fingers. It's about finding peace.
And we are going to be putting this program forward. You can contact Marie DiGiovanni on Facebook. You can also contact her through Women on the Edge or Soul Sister Radio, however you're listening, to find out more about the programs that we have to hold people accountable. If you've gone through the therapy, if you're currently going therapy, you may need a coach. You may need a friend. You may need somebody who's already walked the walk. And Maria DiGiovanni is the person to go and contact. If you're an officer having issues with this, we can tell you more about BRAME. We can tell you about the counseling. If you are a wife or a child and you need help, please reach out to us. We do have resources. We are not here as counselors, but we are here to point you in some of the right directions. And we're about to take this one on. So be praying for us as we go forward, because this is not going to be easy. And I pray for you, my sister, for sharing your testimony so boldly. And we're going to go forward with this. We are moving forward to the goal. And we're going to be here next Friday live.
One of the things
and we're going to be here Monday, correct?
Yeah, we'll be here Monday, too. One of the things you do get to, we have 60 seconds when you get to this point, is I don't have any fear anymore. What is the worst thing that can happen to me when I start talking about this, my truth, the story, what's the worst that can happen to me? Something really tragic and I get to go to heaven. So when you get to a point where you have no fear, that's when you start talking about one of the hardest things, because there isn't one officer out there that likes me when they meet me. And the ones that do, I know they're our allies, and I am praying that they all come quickly. So say goodbye. You got 10 seconds, and we will see you
goodbye.
Next week.
We're going to be here Monday, but we're going to keep the series on Friday. You can always come on Monday to hear about the highlights that we'll be hitting for Friday. And we're going to be looking forward to this. We'll be taking this on Monday, but the series should be on Friday all the way through next week. Oh, my goodness, I don't know what we had down for the list for next Friday. Maria, do you remember? It's going to be a post-traumatic stress disorder and Know Your Rights with Bram. So
yes.
B-R-A-M-E, Brame, okay?
Brame.
Love
it.
You guys. See you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
4radio.com.
I want to take a moment to just give a special thank you to our show sponsors, ImageCoach.com, Soul Sister Enterprise, the Law Office of Corrine R. Walson, and to our station sponsors, Heart4.com and 4 International, where we elevate and empower those who are overcoming adversity.